Hey guys, it's been a long time. Really, really long time. I think it's been over a month at this point since we've released a new episode. It has to have been over a month because it was before school started that we did the best of 2012. And it's the fifth week of school this week. Good gravy. This semester, ladies and gentlemen. But we love you, and we want to bring you something. We want to bring you something to enjoy, something to listen to, something to remind you, hey, that's a podcast that I used to listen to weekly, and they haven't put out a podcast in over a month. Hey, we miss you. Well, we miss you too, listeners. We miss you too. And while our lives are pretty crazy right now, we're going to try to at least get you an episode a month for the next little bit, and hopefully we'll get on a more regular schedule, but we'll see what happens. My semester, as I mentioned, killing me. I'm in more classes than I'm usually in, and they're kicking me around the curb. I'm in a Foucault theory class, and while I love Michel Foucault, it's not fast reading. It's not easy reading. It's worthwhile reading, but it's neither fast nor easy. It's very time-consuming. Very worth it. On top of that, I'm in a seminar where all we're doing is reading Don Quixote and tons of critical works dealing with Don Quixote. I'm in a travel lit class all about 20th century travel narratives. And I'm also taking Portuguese, where we're doing 2 years worth of Portuguese in a semester. We just started the second semester's worth of Portuguese. And consequently, it's a lot of work, seeing as how we're fitting 4 semesters, 2 years worth of stuff into 4 months. Anyway, it's a lot of work. But Darren, too, is busy. He's got finals this week. He's also got himself a new girlfriend, which is keeping him busy. You know, like you do, young love makes us all super busy. Happened to me when I started dating my wife. It's happening to Darren now that he's dating this new girl. I'll keep names out of it for his discretion's sake. If he decides he wants to talk about her more, he can do that. It's not my place. But they're cute together. Good for them. I understand why she's taking all his time. But anyway, we've got a bit of an interesting episode for you here today. Just start us off with a few ideas, a few concepts in pop culture that are on my mind lately, some of which dealing with comics, some of which are ancillary to comics that I'm reading right now. But, you know, all interesting. Second, we'll have a little audio essay by Darren, where he'll be talking about his feelings as the Death of the Family crossover wraps up this last week in the Batman book. He and I both really enjoyed it, and I think that he'll discuss better how he feels about it, and you'll really understand where he's coming from. As a huge Joker fan and as a huge Batman fan, it's really the perfect place to hear some ideas on what Death of the Family all means. Thirdly, we've got a new segment. Darren's nephew Brigham, who you've heard on the podcast before, has decided he wanted to start his own podcast under the auspices of Between the Bubbles. So he and his cousin Luke have started a podcast called Between the Bubbles Little Man Edition. You will hear the first episode of the Little Man Edition of Between the Bubbles. And last but not least, can we really wrap up an episode without hearing Dear Little Matthew review a new comic? We'll be hearing his review of Ultimate Spider-Man, because apparently he's gotten really into the Ultimate Spider-Man books. He'll be doing the one where it's sad because the guy murders Uncle Ben. It's very touching. It's very quick, but it's very, very touching. I'm sure you'll be touched. Anyway, here's some of my pop culture thoughts today. It turns out that comics has had the best year. Comics in general have had the best year since the early 90s, back in the heyday of comic collecting. That's awesome. That is awesome. Comics have not sold as well as they did in 2012 since 1993 or 94. And that's amazing, because that was when comic collecting was a big thing, when people were buying them specifically to be collector's items that they could then retire on. But people don't really do that anymore. That's not why people buy comics. I feel like thanks to all these great movies, all these great TV shows, all these wonderful things that are happening in the world of comics but not related to comics, it's helped kind of push comics back to the forefront, and we're seeing a resurgence in popularity and importance of comics. And that, I think, is a wonderful thing. it's something that I hope to see going forward just increasing. I was really glad to see that Image had some of the best-selling comics, had the best-selling comic last year, because I really want Image to continue giving me high-quality books. 2012 was the year of Image. It had Prophet, it had Glory, it had Peter Panzerfaust, it had Manhattan Projects, it had Saga, it had Happy, which is the Grant Morrison miniseries that ends this week. It had so much good stuff. So much stuff that I couldn't even buy. There was so much of it. Image really is hitting it out of the park because of their creator-owned policies, and I want them to continue. Marvel Now has, by and large, been a great success for Marvel so far, and I hope that it continues to be such, and I hope it continues to bring diverse and exciting rosters of comics characters to the forefront. DC is still going rather strong. They're still selling great, even a year and a half after the New 52 happened. IDW has had some really big hits, one of which was My Little Pony this last year, and they've done some really good work with a lot of their properties that they have. It's been a good year for comics, so we need to continue that. So keep buying comics, kids, because I know I will. News broke this week that Han Solo, Harrison Ford, is going to be back in Episode 7. Hex to the Yeah Baby, give it to me. Old Han, old Chewie, in an old Millennium Falcon. That is all I need. For those of you who don't know me very well, I love a lot of spaceships. Spaceships are some of my favorite things. Science fiction shows are some of my favorite shows. I love the Galactica. The Galactica has a soft place in my heart. I love the Enterprise. And original flavor Enterprise, please. I want my saucer shaped. I don't want it ovule. Either direction. Captain Picard. Sheesh. Actually, I really like Next Generation. And Deep Space Nine is actually my favorite one, but still. I like the Enterprise. Enterprise is cool. Serenity, the Firefly-class vessel from Firefly, one of my all-time favorite ships. But nothing can ever touch my heart the way the Millennium Falcon does. And granted, it's because I grew up with a Millennium Falcon toy. I had the big toy set that you could pop the back off and play with them inside. And there's the little holographic chess set and all that kind of stuff. I grew up with that. So I'll always have a soft spot for the Millennium Falcon. And that's all I need. Old Han, old Chewie, old Leia, old Millennium Falcon. Sure, talk about their kids too, because I guess that's going to be the main plot line. But give me a Falcon and I'm in. Also, I have to admit, we last week got issue 2 of Brian Wood's Star Wars book, and it's really great stuff. It's got subterfuge, it's got espionage, it's got great dialogue, and it's about Luke and Leia and Han. What more do I want from a comic? So I have to just say really quickly, All New X-Men and Uncanny X-Men are some of Bendis' finest work. I have adored both those books. Only the first issue of Uncanny X-Men is out. Yeah, I know. But we've got the first 6 or 7 issues of All New X-Men, and it has consistently been a great book. It has revitalized X-Men in my brain. I wasn't an X-Man kind of thing. I wasn't really an Avengers. I like the ancillary characters. That's who I like. But of the two, I was more of an Avengers guy, but this new X-Men stuff is really, really solid. It's an interesting thing to see into Cyclops' brain again now that he is the leader of the mutant revolution and largely considered to be an evil person by so many people on the planet. And to see young Scott now have to contend with the fact that old Scott has killed his mentor, and how can I become this? It's been fascinating. You should all be reading it. It's really solid work. But make sure to buy the smaller books if you can only buy one. If it's a tight week, make sure to buy the smaller books. You don't need to buy X-Men this week. You can wait till later. You can read it in the trades, because it ain't going to get canceled. This is something else I was going to talk about at the very end of the podcast, but I'll bring it up right now. Go buy Captain Marvel this week. It is right on the cusp of cancellation, I've heard from more than one source. It's selling about as many as Age of Apocalypse and Extreme X-Men, both of which are canceled. I do not want Captain Marvel to be canceled. It is my second favorite superhero book, period. My second favorite. And I want it to continue, and I want it to be strong. And Captain Marvel needs to be selling as many copies each month as Batgirl does. Because Batgirl is the single best-selling solo female title. And that's great. Gail Simone has been doing great work on Batgirl. But Captain Marvel is a better character. And Kelly Sue DeConnick is one of my favorite writers. And I want that book to be selling as well, if not better, than Batgirl. So you all need to go out and buy it this week. Orders. Go buy it. One final thought. There's been a lot of uproar in the My Little Pony community over the last few weeks. Apparently, in the season finale, spoiler alert, in the season finale for season 3 of My Little Pony, Twilight Sparkle became a princess, so she's an alicorn now. She's got wings and a unicorn horn, which I don't know where they got the name alicorn, but whatever. Apparently, there's been a lot of uproar about it, and I think that that's funny as heck. Come on, guys. It's Twilight Sparkle. It's My Little Pony. And as much as I love that show, let's be rational about it, guys. And really, I just brought this up as a way to say IDW has been putting out a really great comic with the My Little Pony comic. I was afraid that it was a limited series. It was only going to go for 4 issues, but apparently it's an ongoing. And they're going to start a micro series where each issue focuses on one of the 6 main ponies. I'm pretty excited about it. It's a really high-quality all-ages book. I've been reading a lot of all-ages book lately, as my wife has been trying to find ones that she could read with the kids that she works with at the after-school program, and we found one that's been working really well, Bravest Warriors, which is a Pendleton Ward property. It's like Adventure Time, but in space with a whole group of people. But that's been a really great comic. Adventure Time itself has been a great comic. The Adventure Time with Fiona and Cake has been great. My Little Pony has been great. Emily and the Strangers was a really great first issue. So there are a lot of good all-ages comics out there. And frankly, guys, we should support them. We should support all-ages comics. Because if we get kids reading comics when they're 10, they'll still be around buying comics when they're 30. And then the medium survives. So it's an important thing to have happen. It happened to me. I read comics when I was a little guy. I had a subscription to Spider-Man. I was just bagging and boarding my old copies of Spider-Man from when I was like 5. And how awesome was that? Because it helped me stay in comics. And here I am, much older than 5, still reading comics because comics are awesome. So we need to support all ages comics to get kids reading comics. And anyway, these are my thoughts for this wonderful evening. I'm going to let Darren say his spiel now, but just know that we love you guys, and we miss you guys, and we want to say hi sometimes, so hi.
Welcome, dear podcast listeners. This is Darren, and unfortunately, maybe Braden already explained or not, I have finals this week because I am year-round in school, so I have the middle of February, so we weren't able to meet up, and it's been a while since we posted, so we wanted to get at least one episode in this month, especially with Death of the Family, with Batman and that big, huge, seminal story that came out. I wanted to share my thoughts, and just before we start, Bray and I both thought it was spectacular, so know that's where we stand going into this. And this is spoilers, so I'm discussing it and talking to you as if you have read it. So if you haven't read it yet and you don't want to know how it ends, then just skip over my entire section. But if you have, or if you're just curious what my thoughts are and you haven't yet, then by all means, please stay and listen. So, and a lot of my thoughts, I was thinking about how I feel about Death of the Family in this huge event. And a lot of my thoughts pattern an article that was written on IGN by Joey Esposito. It is called Hero Worship, A Fate Worse Than Death. And a lot of my sentiments are shared with his viewpoint on the whole event. And let me explain, just, I did not read a lot of the tie-ins because I'm on a tight budget. And you don't need to read the tie-ins. In fact, it seems like the only ones worth reading were Batman and Robin and Batgirl, and a little bit of Detective Comics. The other ones, Nightwing, her was okay. Suicide Squad, Catwoman, I got some. The prelude, it was terrible. And the cool thing is about what Scott Snyder has done with Death of the Family and also with Night of the Owls and Court of the Owls is with these crossovers, you don't need the other issues to know the full story. at the end of this issue, issue 17, Death of the Family, it does have the whole family there, of the Bat family. Catwoman isn't there and whatnot, but you do have Tim Drake, Damian, Dick Grayson, Jason Todd, and you have Barbara Gordon. And they are in this issue, and I don't know how Joker captured them, and quite frankly, it didn't take away or detract from anything. So, going into that, all you need to know is Batman Death of the Family. That's all you want to get. You don't need the other titles. And let me just say, the big question is, how is this as not only a Batman story, but as a Joker-Batman story? Because Joker, I was talking to someone recently about how Joker is one of the best literary villains ever created. I would tie him up there. For me, I think Professor Moriarty and Sherlock Holmes is up there because he is the first arch-villain, some people say, ever created. And he's only in two stories of Sherlock Holmes, but you find out that he's involved in all the stories up until the last case or the... What was it called? I should know this. Anyway, the last case or the last final case, whatever Sherlock Holmes, whatever it's called. They based the second movie off of it. And... what makes Moriarty so great for Sherlock Holmes is Moriarty is like Sherlock Holmes. He is the opposite of Sherlock Holmes, the yin and the yang, where he's just as brilliant, just as smart, and it's what if Sherlock Holmes used his intellect for organized crime and for evil? He would be Professor Moriarty. And for me, with the Joker is Batman if he had no rules. With the, think of the dedication. Because, yes, we know that Riddler's really intelligent, and we know that, and Joker's not a great fighter, unlike Batman is, but Batman is full of hate. Batman is full of hate. I don't care what anyone says. He's full of hate, he's full of brooding, and he's crazy. Batman is crazy, and that is explored in Grant Morrison's Dark Asylum, but... And so it might seem surprising that I say that Joker is the opposite of Batman, but you think here, Batman is about order and about justice. Even though he works outside the laws of justice, he still is about justice, and he is crazy. And it's basically is what would Batman be if he flipped a switch and through his traumatic event went really crazy and had no laws and no rules, he could be Joker, in my mind, with the whole anarchy approach. And Joker is dedicated, and Joker, even though he doesn't necessarily have plans per se, I think that's a ruse. Joker does have plans, and he definitely has plans in Death of the Family, and he's very meticulous. And once again, to me, it really shows how opposite they really, really are, and how great of a pair they are. And so, Joker is one of the best villains, and whenever you have Joker, story with Batman, there is going to be hype involved through any fan. And so, it comes down to it, did the Death of the Family live up to that hype? For me, it definitely did. I think that this will be a story that we will look back 10, 20 years from now and think, Death of the Family, how did that impact me as a reader? How did it change my view of comics? You look at Killing Joke and how that really explored the relationship between Batman and Joker and how that's a seminal story. Batman Year One, The Dark Knight Returns, I would say Long Halloween, and even Nightfall, with the fact that Batman had his back broken. These are stories that we talk about still that happened 10, 20 years ago. I think Death of the Family is part of that group. And just getting into comics about a year and a half ago, I have not read a story yet as it's going on in superhero comics. It's a little bit different with Punk Rock Jesus. I think as a story, that was one that I read, that was one we'll talk about for a very long time. But in superhero comics, I've not read a story as I'm reading it when I put it down and think, this will... we'll still be discussing this 20 years from now, and this will be a story that when you think of a Batman story, people say you have to get Death of the Family. That's one of the ones you have to own or read to really understand who Joker is and who Batman is. And so that was one of the most exciting things for me with Death of the Family, was to as I put 17 down and I think about it, and as I contemplate what I just read and the impact it had for me, not only as a Batman fan, but as a fan of superhero comics, that this is a story that we will be talking about for a very, very long time. And even because it's so controversial, because people were so upset that no one died, it then adds to it that this will be a story that we talk about because of people are so upset that it wasn't Alfred or it wasn't, you know, one of the Robins, and a lot of people thought it would be Alfred. But that adds to me its greatness, the fact that there is a lot of controversy. And the fact remains, though, when you talk about someone who not dying, and granted, I'm glad no one died. I feel like, especially now that I've read it, the impact is greater when you actually have everyone living and everyone not trusting Batman anymore, and everyone wanting to really evaluate how do I feel, all the, you know, how I felt about Bruce Wayne and maybe this father figure. Maybe he does love Joker more than he loves me. Maybe he loves his crusade and his rogues and cares about them more than he cares about my livelihood and who I am, and really questioning that relationship. Because when someone dies, you're sad, but you can still go on. But the fact remains, when everyone's still alive and that trust is broken, that is something that you can't always get over and recover from. And the stories that can stem from this are a lot more interesting now than they were as if Alfred died, because they mourn, they fight through it, but then you basically have to move on. Yet when trust is broken, that person's still alive and you still have to interact with them, and you're constantly reminded all the time of the doubt and the questions that you have with your relationship with that person. That's what's going to go on with the Bat family. And so it's more interesting. I feel like it's more daring, and it would have been an easy cop-out in comics to kill Alfred, because he would have been brought back. You can't kill Alfred and keep him there. I know that the New 52 have said if someone dies, it's staying that way, but I just don't ever believe those comments. I think that if someone dies, they can come back, because it always happens in comics. And it isn't cheap in death, but it definitely is not as poignant to me. And so this way, it's a lot more poignant, it's a lot more... I'm a lot more drawn to what happened, and it's a lot more impactful. And I will say, I have to give this story, it's one of my favorite Batman stories I've ever read, and I feel like I've read a lot of the seminal Batman stories. And this is, I put this up there with The Killing Joke. I absolutely loved it. And I would say, so I read issue 17, and then the next day I reread issue 13 to 17, and reading it again as one story without the month breaks, it was even better. And it read really, really well, and it made issue 17 a lot more understandable with the themes that Scott Snyder is going for. The work that Greg Capullo did is on art. He's been doing a great run on Batman ever since issue 1, but issue 17, he just was a different level, because he would use the skin of Joker's detached face and mold it in a way where obviously Joker can't really grimace, but because of how Batman and Joker were fighting and how just the face would be distorted in that in the fight scene would make it a grimace. And so you knew the emotion of that Joker was feeling and portraying with his face, even though he really wasn't portraying it with his face, because he can't, because his muscles aren't attached to the flesh. And just the creepiness of it all and the horror, that it felt like a horror comic, which is beautifully, beautifully done by Greg Capullo. And they just put on a whole different plane. Props to them. They nailed out the park. This was the finest issue in their run. And I have to say that if any of you are Marvel fans, you're not really into DC, when this comes out in trade, please go pick it up. And because it, I think this is the story that everyone needs on their bookshelf, I'm going to give this. I'm going to give this whole arc, you know, a 9.5. No, it wasn't perfect, but it was pretty close. And this is definitely the best story I've read in superhero comics. As I've been reading comics, you know, that come out, it's not the best story I've ever read in superhero comics, but the best one I've read as I've been collecting them in floppies and, you know, monthly issues. And I really cannot say enough about what they've done. And I think Braden feels the same way. We haven't talked about it, but just what we've said in Twitter or on Facebook with each other. And the thing is, you know, a story's great when you can sit down and the more you think about it, days after you've read it, the more that you love it and the more that it hits you just how great it is. This is one of those stories. Do not take your initial judgment for how you feel about this. It's like fine food or you know, people say fine wine, where it just needs to sit and settle and just really, really age a little bit, and then it really hits you just how amazing of a job and a work that this is. This is, whenever people, you know, say, well, why do you read superhero comics? Why do you read those and spend money on them? Aren't they for kids? This is a story that you can pull out and have them read and say, no, this is not just for kids. There are so many complex, interesting themes here. I mean, the fact of Joker basically saying, you know, why did he cut off his face is to show that underneath it all, he really is crazy. He has, as he says, a grin, a larger grin, and Batman underneath it all, he has fangs and he's a bat and he has that nasty, just that nastiness to him. And that's who Joker's trying to get Batman to explore again. And just was beautifully done. So anyway, bravo, Scott Snyder, Greg Capullo did an awesome, awesome work. For me, it surpassed the hype. It was an amazing, amazing Batman Joker story. And until next time, readers, or listeners, because you're not reading our stuff, but until next time, happy reading.
Okay, welcome. This is Between the Bubbles Little Man, or Little Man Between the Bubbles. This is a new thing that Darren let me and Luke, his nephews, do. I am Brigham. I've been on your podcast before. I've been in the Festivus episode. I showed Luke the interview. So, Luke, you want to introduce yourself?
Well, sure. My name is Luke DeVore, and I'm
Brigham DeVore, yeah.
And we're cousins.
So, we are going to start talking about the kids series. So we're going to talk about Ultimate Spider-Man, Avengers, and Avengers Assemble, Green Lantern Animated Series, Marvel Magazine, DC Nation Super Spectacular, all those great things. So, we are going to talk about the new issues of Avengers, which is called Vision to the Rescue. So, Luke, what are your feelings about Vision to the Rescue, the new issue, number 10?
Well, it's got a good storyline.
Well, the first story, because these, the Avengers ones are divided into two stories. The first story, you'd say, and explore it?
Yeah, well, it's kind of in the middle.
Yeah.
Kind of close to Adora.
It's got the leader. I don't like the leader that much.
Yeah, he's pretty lame.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got a weird and dumb head.
Yeah, well, that's because of his, like, mind or something. He's really smart, so he's got a giant head. The second one is great because it's got the Vision, and he's one of the main characters. I like the Vision. I don't know if you do.
Yeah, I love him.
He's great. And it's Ultron. He's a good villain. It's between Explore It and Adore It. So we also want to talk about the Hell joins the Hammer Tribe, which is an issue of Green Lantern animated series.
Got a pretty cool cover.
Yeah, it's got Hal in his hammer, new Hammer
Tribe. He has wings. It's got a new color.
Blue. Yeah, he's blue. And he goes to the Hammer Tribe, the planet where they are, and his ring, it's kind of like the story of Hanukkah with his ring, because he doesn't charge it for a while, and it still works. So, and it's really cool because he makes a glider, and he helps the prince and princess whose parents have been taken from, and saves them from the Nail Tribe. So, that was a really great comic. I really liked it, personally. Luke hasn't read it before. What do you want to talk about, man? Do you want to talk about the new event, Iron Man 3?
Yeah,
or
sure.
The Captain America 2?
Yeah,
so
sure.
Iron Man 3 is coming out a day before the Avengers came out a year ago. It's coming out May 3rd.
Yeah.
In 2013.
Yes.
Because the Avengers came out May 4th, 2012.
And it's got a pretty cool cover.
Yeah, it's got a really cool looking preview, like the man.
He's got
blowing Tony's, other stuff up.
And Tony Stark has built a new suit.
Yeah, at the end he's pulling a suit of his. This is bagged together with a cord, and he's pulling it through the snow. And we will talk a little bit about Iron Man 2, which we haven't seen. We've heard about it. We're just not allowed to see it.
Because of this inappropriate part.
Yeah, age inappropriate. We're not allowed to see it. So, we'll talk about Iron Man 2. I've heard that Black Widow interrogates Iron Man, or Tony Stark. Black Widow, I really like her. She's cool.
Yeah.
Natasha Romanoff. She dates Bucky Barnes, who later becomes the Winter Soldier. So that will hook into the Winter Soldier movie, Captain America 2. So I looked at a lot of sneak peeks for that. The Winter Soldier, Bucky falls off a cliff, but the Russians find him and make his make him a hybrid cyborg. Like they
parts of him
are robots.
Yeah.
And they freeze him every 10 years they let him out, and then he goes and murders somebody because he's a good assassin. So, we're really excited to see that next year in 2014. And you have any thoughts to share, Luke?
Well, yeah, I might have a few. And there's Avengers 2, which is coming out.
Yeah, we don't know much about that. We do know. I don't think Luke knows, but Thanos, I know a little bit more about comics than Luke, because I've been into it more than him, a little bit earlier, so I'll just tell you how we got into comics. The movies started coming out, am I right, Luke?
Yes, and the titles, they just make you want
to see it so bad.
Yeah,
because
they make
the people
you crave
you know.
It.
And my uncle sent me some comics, and I started sharing them with Luke, and started buying them, and we were hooked.
Yeah.
We were hooked. I didn't tell you which ones to buy, you know, so you can start buying them more. And I read Captain America Golden Age and Thor Golden Age. And the Avengers 2, which I'm excited, the next villain is Thanos. Thanos, so you see him at the end talking to the leader of the Chitauri. His name. He has the Infinity Gauntlet with 5 power rings that can wreak havoc. They are amazingly strong. And I want to... Okay, now to DC. We want to talk about the super spectacular Batman magazine. So, it talks about the different Batmobiles over time. So, we just want to talk about those. They have a bunch of different ones that are very interesting, and I read them intently. Looking through my comic strip.
It's pretty dark.
So, Yeah, we really like them. They're great because, oh, here it is. I found it. So, here we have the original Batman TV series from 1996, The Batmobile, Batman Forever 1995, Batman 1986, Batman and Robin 1997, The Dark Knight Trilogy 2005 to 2012,
Batman the animated series 1992.
I have a toy of that. Yeah, I have a toy. And Batman Live, it looks kind of cool, but I hear it stinks. Batman Live 2012. So, the Batmobile, we also have a preview to Green Lantern Steampunk. It's got Batman poster, it's got a bunch of new stuff. Let's talk about, what do you want to talk about?
Well, I don't really know.
Did you like to, let's see, so, we can talk about...
How about Amazing Ultimate Spider-Man?
Okay, yeah, that's a good idea. So, this is last month's Ultimate Spider-Man number 5 with a with a pretty funny Marvel mashup. It's got Rocket Raccoon and there's like a, I don't remember his name, and they're trying to feed Hulk so they don't eat them. There's a walrus, I forgot his name, and it's a pretty good story. It's got Absorbing Man, and Peter's trying to finish his lab report before it, and Ultimate Spider-Man is always really funny. I watched the TV show. I'd say the first one was really close to an Adore It, but still an Explore It.
Yeah.
Luke hasn't read this one yet, but he can agree with me pretty well, because we have known each other for a very long time, and
since,
we're very alike.
Since we were born.
And the second one, I'd say, it's got the Trapster, and he becomes the Juggernaut from X-Men. So, that one, it was really good. I would say it's an Adore It or an Explore It. And it has a preview for Thanos Rules, and we talked about Thanos being in the next Avengers movie. For closings,
should we wrap it up?
Yeah, let's wrap it up. So, this has been Little Man Between the Bubbles. I'm Luke Brigham. This is Luke. It's been a great time being on the podcast. That was me cracking my knuckles, sorry.
And that is where the file that they have sent me mysteriously ends. So it's a bit of a cliffhanger. I'm not sure exactly what they would have said there, but whatever. Anyway, here's Matthew.
Hi, my name is Matthew. Today we read Ultimate Spider-Man issue number 5.
This was kind of a sad comic.
Let's try another one.
Another one? I think we better go help Mom with dinner. What was your favorite part in this story?
The thinking part.
Show me which one.
That part.
This one right here? Where he's remembering how he could have helped, but he didn't help.
Mm-hmm. He looks like a fireman, but he's really not.
What do you think of Peter Parker?
Good. Now he remembers.
Mm-hmm. And what did he learn that his uncle taught him?
Great power comes great responsibility.
That is a valuable life lesson. All right. I think we're going to stop right here.
To be continued.